Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... Listener, in just a couple of days, it'll be July the 1st, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's target date for the imposition of Israeli sovereignty over some 30% of the West Bank. Reports over the past few days, however, would seem to indicate that Israel is planning either on scaling back the extent of the annexation or putting the whole thing on hold until the White House gives the green light. Which gives us an excuse, as if we needed one, to discuss some other issues and to get over our annexation fixation. And who better to discuss those issues with than Haaretz editor-in-chief Aluf Ben, who's here in the studio, and joining us by telephone, Haaretz's Judy Maltz, who'll be along to eulogize God TV. Before all of that, though, congratulations are in order. A hearty mazal tov and mabruk to the editor of Haaretz English edition, Avi Scharf, and his wife Maggie Haddad, on the birth of their child. And now, on with the show. Aluf, good to see you. How are you?
I'm fine, you know. Summer in Tel Aviv. This year only in Tel Aviv in the area, so...
Going to be a long, hot summer.
Exactly.
We've agreed to put sovereignty now on the back burner for this week, Aluf, but we're blessed, if that's the word, to have two other burning issues to discuss. The Prime Minister protests against Netanyahu and the spike in coronavirus cases here in Israel. Are Israelis finally getting agitated by the fact that their prime minister is on trial for corruption, Aluf? The protests appear to be intensifying.
Well, you know, I believe that those people who are protesting were against Netanyahu last week and the week before that, and the election before that, and the one last year, and so on and so forth. So I don't see, and I think this is the main issue of the protesters. We had Nir Hasson, our correspondent, went to talk to them, and he noticed that most of them are over 55. And they yearn for some fresher blood, younger people to attend this protest, which doesn't happen.
The young people aren't joining in?
No.
But there does seem to be a feeling that there are more protests, they're angrier, and they're spreading across the country.
Well, this is reasonable, because if until... A couple of months ago, there was a hope that Benny Gantz was going to lead the anti-Netanyahu political camp, and there was a way to replace Netanyahu and focus his agenda on the trial rather than leading the country through the election process. Once Gantz defected to the Netanyahu camp and joined the government, obviously that ended the dream, and there's no clear visible alternative to the right-wing government at this point, which brings people to the street, because they say, okay, we tried three times in elections, it didn't work, now we can protest. But still, this is not a mass protest, and it's going to take a while to see in which direction it's going.
This morning, Netanyahu said that he regretted the timing of his request for a retroactive 1 million shekel tax refund, a request that the Knesset obviously granted him last week. To what extent did the poor optics of that request feed the current anger? And just to give you some kind of perspective, listener, in 2019, Forbes estimated that Netanyahu's personal wealth is around 50 million shekels.
Well, you know, it's still, you know, nobody likes to pay taxes, and Netanyahu doesn't like to pay, and his family, they don't like to pay for anything. Regardless, look, it's an accumulation of issues. The trial that's been going on against Netanyahu is ultimate grip over the political system without an alternative. The feeling that no matter what's happening, Netanyahu is going to win it. And that request for the tax refund, obviously, was
it looked very bad.
Swinish. Yeah. It looked very bad. It looked very bad. But again, Netanyahu only regrets the timing, which means that next week it's okay, and not just regretted that it was last week.
Maybe the juxtaposition of record unemployment with the prime minister getting a tax refund didn't go down too well.
Yeah, but he doesn't regret the requests.
He said it was justified.
Yeah, he just regrets the timing, so it's meaningless.
The arrest of Amir Haskell on Friday, Alouf, it felt symbolic. For any of our listeners who don't know the name, Haskell is a decorated Air Force pilot and a former Brigadier General. He's been protesting against Netanyahu since 2016, and he was arrested along with two others at a demo outside Bibi's official residence and released from custody early Sunday morning. The court that released him also rejected a police request to bar him from entering Jerusalem for 15 days. Was it symbolic in any way? Is this a turning point, Alouf?
Well, it was symbolic because for the first time, this, you know, Haskell and several other people have been standing every weekend in major traffic intersections across the country, waving flags against Netanyahu and signs against Netanyahu and calling him to resign and calling him crime minister and so on and so forth. For the first time, it became front page news because the police decided to arrest. And still, this is very much the epitome of the anti-Netanyahu camp, because Haskell could have been a member of Knesset from Blue and White.
In terms of his military record, of his views,
of his focus on better governance rather than foreign policy or security, in using his military record as kind of proof for his support for the country, for that he's against the prime minister, not against Israel or against Zionism or anything like that. We can never tell. We don't know what's happening inside the minds of the police, whether this was really a decision of someone on the street, local commander, or is it a sign of the times within Israel police, where the head of Jerusalem district, Don Yadid, is fighting against the acting chief commissioner, Moti Cohen, to be the next police high commissioner in Israel. And the feeling is that they feel that pleasing the rulers of the country who sit inside the Balfour Street Citadel watching the protest is going to be a smart move to gain promotion. So we don't know if that's what lies behind it. The acting commissioner this morning regretted the arrest.
Not just the timing of the arrest.
Not just the timing, but said that the police should allow protest. It's part of its role in democracy. Or in other words, he was throwing an arrow at his rival, the Jerusalem police commander.
The acting top cop said that the role of the police is to facilitate peaceful process and that they'll learn the lessons of the incident. We don't know whether this
arrest,
was...
Don't arrest pilots.
Right, yes.
Arrest infantrymen.
So we don't know whether this was an order from the justice minister, whether it was somebody just...
It's not the justice, it's the police, internal security minister.
Of course.
We don't know. Clearly it was his policy and he gave it full backing afterwards when he said, I don't care if the arrested is a general or a private, and he argued that his own cousin was also arrested in that protest. I don't know. Clearly that's the sign of the times.
So even if it wasn't a direct political order, it reeks of a political arrest.
Yeah.
Did you see
It doesn't hurt the aspiring police commanders in the eyes of those who sit inside the Balfour Street residence.
That the cavalry came to the rescue on a shining white horse. Even Netanyahu's coalition partners came out against the arrest, right? Trouble in paradise?
Yeah, true to form, always a little bit later than the others. And only after many people in that camp said, well, Generals Gantz and Ashkenazi, the leaders of Blue and White, the defense and foreign affairs ministers, you were the commanders of Amir Haskell and others in the protests. At least you should support them, and they did. Well, this coalition is not exactly a love affair between Netanyahu and Gantz. Mm. Netanyahu needed Gantz to give him to save him from his inability to put together a coalition and the recurring elections, and to give him some sort of public carte blanche to remain as prime minister despite the ongoing trial. For Gantz, Gantz sees this partnership as the only hope for himself to become prime minister if Netanyahu respects their agreement on rotation next year. I doubt it. But Gantz is trying to regain some support among his disappointed voters, arguing that without him, we would have been under the rule of a purely right-wing government, which would do away with democracy, and that he and Ashkenazi are there to slow it down or to stop or to veto some bad things that the right-wing was going to do and so on.
Hmm.
Not very convincing, but obviously this incident is another opportunity for Gantz to show some distance from Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be more worried by the arrest itself or by the police's request for a restraining order?
Well, it was tied. The arrest was a kind of punishment because Haskell and two other protesters refused to sign the restraining order and refused to stay away from Jerusalem.
And the court sided with them, and
yes,
presumably that's a good thing, right?
That's a good thing.
Congratulate the court on.
We congratulate the court, and clearly the state is not going to appeal it to some higher court.
Mm.
But as you said, the protest is getting in higher gear, and it remains to be seen whether we're going to see more people and younger people joining it.
Mm.
Look, there's many of the unemployed or people on furloughs are young people. Under 35, whose career path is unclear, who have been tortured by the higher cost of living, the exorbitant price of real estate in Israel for many, many years, and whose, I would say, elder brothers and cousins were the backbone of the 2011 social protest.
Mm.
At that time, it was mainly young people who took to the streets. And the deadline here is September, when the unemployment subsidies are going to run out. And I don't see any sign of all these people all on furlough going back to work anytime soon because of the rise of the epidemic. So this is the new test.
Mm. It's the economy, stupid.
In this case, it is, because most people who feel the coronavirus attack in Israel feel it through their bank account and not sick.
Mm.
Speaking of the coronavirus, we can't not discuss it, Alouf. Our colleague Amos Harel reports that a panel of experts is warning that Israel's lost control of the outbreak amid a major new spike in daily cases. Alouf, is this the price that we pay when the Prime Minister is distracted by criminal charges and annexation?
I don't think it has to do with the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister used the coronavirus explosion in March in order to split the opposition and bring Gantz into the coalition to a so-called emergency cabinet to deal with the coronavirus. But since this political victory, he stepped out of the decision-making on the coronavirus and left it to other people, and he doesn't stand up front.
Has he left it in the right hands, though? Because this committee is recommending that it's removed from the hands of the public health officials.
Well, there are some internal struggles among different groups of officials and advisors. Clearly, what we see is that the summer in Israel is not a vaccine against the coronavirus. Despite the rising temperature, rising humidity, all the signs of good old summer all over Israel, and especially in the coastal plain, we don't see declining cases. We see a spike in new cases. What we don't see yet, luckily, is a sharp rise in the number of people hospitalized, of people on life support, of people dying from the coronavirus.
Mm.
But all the experts warned that this might happen. I think the main issue is that it's going to be very tough to put people back in quarantine, in massive quarantine, and tell them not to walk away from their home more than 100 meters. It's going to be very difficult.
Mm. Is it possible, Alouf, and this is a question that's been bothering me for a while, is it possible that the sector of Israeli society best equipped to deal, to conduct the war on coronavirus is a combination of the military and the intelligence community? I mean, maybe we need to swallow the frog and let the IDF defeat COVID.
Well, they cannot defeat COVID because the IDF doesn't have a vaccine. They are better prepared to deal with emergencies and contingencies than the civilian authorities in Israel.
And perhaps to make sure that any lockdown is implemented. And,
but, what
but nobody wants to see troops on the street, but maybe this is...
Well, look, the question here is, do we need lockdown? Do we need total quarantine of everybody in Israel to stop the virus? And once again, stopping the economy and sending more people to unemployment? it's too much.
Mm.
Some traffic jams are back in the main highways and in Tel Aviv. People are going to work. People are going to the beaches. People are going to have vacations in Israel, in Israeli hotels, in Israeli resorts, in the nature reserves, touring the country, when at least a large part of them traditionally would have been abroad by this time. The summer holiday is around the corner, and people are going to stay in Israel.
So it's too hot for a lockdown.
It is, both weather-wise and mentally, psychologically.
Alouf, on that note, we'll wrap it up for today. Thank you for your time. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Listener, we're going to play another jingle, and we'll be right back with Judy Maltz. Hi, Judy. How have you been keeping?
Good. How about you, Simon?
Pretty good, thank you. So, Judy, neither COVID nor heat nor annexation of Palestine stays you from the swift delivery of your appointed scoops. I understand there's been an update on the God TV story. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, breaking news from this morning. The Cable and Satellite Council chairman has decided that he is taking Shelanu, which is the Hebrew language station of God TV, off the air in Israel. And in his decision, he noted that God TV was not very truthful when he submitted its application for a license in Israel. In other words, it didn't exactly say that its mission was to proselytize and to spread the gospel of Jesus among Israeli Jews.
And it still claims that isn't its mission, right?
Well, it says that is its mission. It doesn't deny that that's its mission. It just says that it made clear in its application that this was its mission. And the Cable Council chairman says, no, it did not. It said that it was providing programming for the very small Christian community in Israel.
In Hebrew.
In Hebrew, right.
Mm.
Right. So,
someone is bearing false witness here.
You wonder, wasn't he wondering why in Hebrew?
Mm.
Because most Christians in Israel do speak Arabic, so this was a Hebrew language station, so it should have raised a red flag earlier, probably.
Mm. And just to remind our listeners, what's the issue in Israel with proselytizing?
In certain cases, it's against the law. It's against the law if you offer somebody money in exchange for converting to another religion. And it's against the law if you try to convert someone under the age of 18 without the consent of his or her parents.
Mm.
And that was here the problem, because a lot of God TV's programming is geared toward younger viewers.
Mm. So we can chalk one up to the rule of law then, or maybe, as representatives of Shelanu TV have claimed, this is blatant discrimination on the basis of religion.
That's right, and they do intend, this is even fresher news as of 5 minutes ago, they said they do intend to resubmit their application. I'm assuming this time they'll be a little bit more forthright about what this is about.
Mm, but presumably any application that admits to proselytizing or that is their goal will be automatically rejected this time, one would imagine.
Not necessarily, because as I said, proselytizing is illegal in Israel under certain circumstances, but not all. If it can prove that it's not breaking the law, then maybe it will be approved.
Mm.
We'll wait and see.
I wonder if this will hurt Israel's, or maybe just Netanyahu's, relations with the evangelical community in the United States.
Well, that's going to be interesting now that the decision has finally been taken, because as you know, we've been following this for about 2 months now.
Mm.
There was a hearing, and there were negotiations, and all this stuff going on behind the scenes. So now that there is finally a decision, and Israel is doing something quite unprecedented, it's taking down an evangelical TV channel. It's the first time, and there are others that do operate here. I would assume there will be pressure on Netanyahu from his evangelical friends in the United States to revisit this decision and show a little bit more flexibility, since, as you know, the evangelicals are very good friends of his, and he may, in fact, need them now more than ever because of what's going on with the annexation plan.
Mm. They're also, of course, very good friends of President Trump, which plays into the whole story. It's also going to be interesting to see how this story is covered by the international media, I think. I mean, the framing is going to have to be very delicate.
Right, right. And there was a lot of interest in this story in the international media. That's because, I guess, outside of Israel, a lot of people know what God TV is. We didn't really know here until this whole issue came up, but it's, you know, it has, they claim to have 200, 300 million viewers on operating 200 countries, like the third largest Christian evangelical broadcaster in the world. So, yeah, there will be repercussions.
We will definitely be keeping our eyes on that story, Judy, and as well as the Nefesh B'Nefesh story that you reported exclusively last week. Tell us about that.
Well, Nefesh B'Nefesh went through an audit with the Registrar of Nonprofits at the Justice Ministry, and the report showed that it wasn't exactly behaving as you would assume a 60 million shekel organization should behave. Mm. It was being run more like a mom-and-pop shop in the neighborhood where certain very basic things, as one person told me, this is a, you know, nonprofit governance 101. They weren't doing. There was no, the audit found that there was no policy about senior executive pay. They were giving out loans to workers without any contract, rather than having one authorized signatory on organizational, rather than having two, they had only one. Lots of little things. I mean, there was nothing major here. There's no embezzlement or anything like that. But, you know, let's remember, Nefesh B'Nefesh is the organization that brings immigrants from North America to Israel. It has a monopoly. It gets lots and lots of money from the government. There have always been questions about how necessary is it to have an organization that just specializes in North American Jews, because this was something that the Jewish Agency did for many years. So why did we need a special organization with all the infrastructure and all the salaries and all the advertising? And has it really brought more immigrants from North America to Israel?
I mean, there have also been questions about whether Israel should even have this sort of quasi-privatized immigration service, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I think the audit report that came out is evidence that there are problems here. When it's a private organization, they decide how much they're going to pay themselves. They really don't have to be accountable to anyone. And, you know, basically, the big thing that Nefesh B'Nefesh does is, or at least one of the big things, is it pays for the plane tickets for immigrants who come to Israel, and it organizes the flights for them. Now, if you look at their budget, the plane tickets, I think last year was 2018 that we have the financial report, plane tickets were about 11 million shekels, and it gets this money from the Jewish Agency. So, you know, you ask yourself, so why does it need 60 million shekels? Is that, I mean, informational workshops, how much do they cost, you know? There's this huge infrastructure, and basically every year we get more or less 3,000 new immigrants, and it hasn't changed much. So, you know, do we need Nefesh B'Nefesh? Don't we? Do they do the work better than the Jewish Agency? I don't know.
The organization also played a starring role, if that's the right phrase, in another piece that you wrote recently, Judy, the case of an American woman in her 80s who was allowed to board a flight to Israel this month, even though she was infected with the coronavirus. And how on earth did that happen?
How on earth did that happen is a very good question, because we were able to find out that Nefesh B'Nefesh did have advanced information on the fact that this woman and her daughter might be sick, and had asked them to be tested. Despite that, they did not wait for the results to come in before allowing them on the plane. The daughter tested negative, but the mom tested positive, an 80-something-year-old woman. And, of course, that put everybody else that was on their flight at risk.
And everybody with whom they will come into contact once they arrive in Israel, of course. So we're still importing the virus.
Right. But remember, all these people who are on the flight, I mean, this is standard practice these days, they go immediately into quarantine for 14 days.
As far as I know.
Right. Mm. And as far as I know, none of them have tested positive for coronavirus.
Mm. That sounds like more like luck than judgment, one has to say.
Right, yeah. Right.
Judy, just to wrap things off, I've been meaning to ask you, apropos immigration, our new Aliyah minister, Pnina Tamano-Shata, said that she expects something like 90,000 new immigrants to arrive here by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that Aliyah is on anyone's agenda these days, not the Israeli government and not diaspora Jews.
So how do I say this nicely? I don't think she knows what she's talking about. I think she got mixed up.
Mm.
There is a forecast of, I think it's 45,000 immigrants in the year 2021, and that is a forecast of the Jewish Agency, which depends on many things. That,
which presumably didn't take into account Corona when the estimate was made.
Right. So, you know, they're talking about, you know, if there's a vaccination and if the unemployment in Israel goes down again to levels that predated Corona. Remember, Simon, we have, last I saw, 28% unemployment in Israel.
Mm.
Why would anyone who has a job abroad leave the job to come to a country where so many people are losing their jobs every single day? And alternatively, if they don't have a job, well, they're not in a good position to compete in a market where they don't speak the language or don't speak it as well as the natives and don't know the culture. So really, I don't know where the minister came up with that figure. I think she just simply made a mistake or wishful thinking or magical thinking or something like that. And she didn't know how to get out of it. So she just... We'll talk in December and we'll see, or January, when the figures come in.
I suppose fantasy is one way of dealing with this difficult reality, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Judy, thank you very much for your time. Stay safe.
Yes.
Bye-bye. That's our show for this week. And my thanks to Aluf Ben, Judy Maltz, and producer Aaron. Thanks to you too, listener. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Haaretz Weekly. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.